The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
So as we head into the second week of the new school term, infections and bugs, they're back in force. The poor summer weather, of course, hasn't helped. So for advice on how to deal with all this and what we can expect, I'm joined on the line by GP Alona Duffy. Alona, good morning.
Good morning.
Alona, what are parents in for? What are the likely things the kids are going to come home with?
Well, we're starting to see a steady rise in presentations of young children, and that matches with going back to school. And it always takes a few weeks before the bugs start to circulate, percolate, and really then start to present in our younger children. So typically it's viruses, and most viruses present in a very similar way. And that will tend to be often with coughs and snuffles, temperatures, then perhaps also sore throat, sore ears, and obviously the awful gastroenteritis, which we're seeing quite a bit of in the last week. So that's typically how the kids are presenting to us at the moment.
Talk to me a little bit about how parents can differentiate, because when you talk gastroenteritis, you don't know, is it a bug or is it food poisoning? When you talk viruses, you don't know, is it virus or bacterial, or whether or not you should go to the GP?
Okay, well, starting with the gastroenteritis. Gastroenteritis is typically an infection in the gut. And the most common are viral gastroenteritis. Now, how do you know it's not food poisoning? Food poisoning tends to be very severe and sudden in onset. And obviously, if it's something you've eaten, typically other people who've eaten it will have it as well at the same time. So we tend to find it hits hard and it hits fast. You may have high temperatures, really profuse diarrhea, which is loose stool, and obviously vomiting as well. Tends to settle quite quickly in the majority of people. But when it is severe, it's very severe, and younger people and older people sometimes require a little bit of help with fluid because they can get dehydrated very quickly. But the typical gastroenteritis we see is viral, and it'll often start often with a little bit of vomiting or diarrhea. Diarrhea often lasting anything up to a week, so people sometimes get a bit panicked about that in young babies if the diarrhea is persisting. But as long as we're getting fluids in and we're not losing fluids through vomiting, then we're usually happy enough to just watch and wait. So what would we say to parents? Hold on the solids, but continue with the fluids. If it's a baby, you continue to feed them the breastfed, if they're breastfed, and the bottles, if they're bottles. We don't tend to kind of fast them. Adults and older children, we may say no solids, but lots of fluids. And we want a mixture of fluids. We want fluids that have glucose in them. So one big thing is never give diet drinks to your child if they're sick, because there's no glucose in that. And we use up more, we need more energy when we are sick. So sometimes that can create its own problems. And again, watch and wait. There are no medications for vomiting and diarrhea in children. In adults, there are. People can get them over the counter, the likes of Imodium, Lomotil you can buy for your diarrhea. And you can also buy rehydration solutions like Diorolite. But in the majority of cases, especially for children, we don't tend to need that.
What about contagion from the children?
Yes, well, gastroenteritis can be very contagious, which is why if you have vomiting and diarrhea, you should be staying at home, both if you're a child or an adult. And we normally, the rule of thumb is until you're 24 hours free of your diarrhea, then you can return. And again, that can be difficult. It can be very hard on parents because they're trying to find somebody to look after them. But the reality of it is you can't be sending children like that into creche or school because they are contagious and they're going to spread it to other children and perhaps the workers in the creche and the teachers in the school.
You listed coughs and colds and all of that. How do we tell virus from bacteria?
Typically, again, the viruses will start, they'll start slow with the coughs, the snuffles, and they'll tend to self-limit. So they're not going to get hugely worse. Most people won't be in distress with their breathing. They'll be able to do most things normally, such as eat and drink and carry on moving around with their daily living. Temperatures will be there, but typically temperatures with a virus will start to improve after 48 to 72 hours. So really after 2 to 3 days, you're seeing the temperatures starting to drop. So again, if you have a temperature in a child, the most important thing is don't panic immediately. Treat that temperature with your Calpol. Calpol should be your first line, or any paracetamol syrup, rather than jumping straight into the Nurofen, which can be more toxic on the kidneys. So I think, you know that they have a temperature. It is amazing, Anton, how many people don't have a thermometer in their house. And I think it's a kind of vital piece of equipment for every house, not only if you have children. And ideally, a thermometer, either one that you're going to be putting in under your armpit or even better, the one you put in your ear. The forehead thermometers, especially the ones that you press on the forehead, aren't really that accurate because one of our ways of cooling our body down is to sweat, and that's to help cool our skin and to cool our body temperature. So obviously, if you're sweating, you may not get an accurate forehead temperature, so avoid the forehead thermometers. What's the normal temperature? So a high temperature is anything, we'd say treat it if it's above 38 degrees Celsius.
What then about the pressure on GPs to provide antibiotics, even if they're not necessary? I assume you still have people coming in saying, my child has been sick for 3 days. You suspect it's viral, but they're still saying, I'll go on, doctor, give her the antibiotic.
I suppose there's probably less of a problem with the child that's been sick for 3 days coming to us, because we probably want to see those children. But I think a big thing we are seeing is, we understand parents are under pressure, but arriving with your child because your child has a temperature and maybe a cough or snuffles for a day or even 2 days, when, you know, we haven't watched and waited to see if this is viral or not, because the reality of it is an antibiotic is not going to speed up the recovery of this illness, and it's not going to make them better any quicker. But we see this typically in the out of hours, often at the weekends on a Sunday, when parents probably in a wee bit of a panic thinking, who's going to look after my child if they're sick tomorrow? Can I get them better? Can I get them started on the antibiotic? And I would say to parents that many of creches, when they hear your child is on an antibiotic, don't want them either, because most of the antibiotics we use on children tend to be 3 times a day dosing, which means they would have to give the antibiotic. So many creches won't do that. So you're really not helping yourself. But more importantly, giving an unnecessary antibiotic is creating risk for your child, number one, of side effects from the antibiotic, but number two, more importantly, of creating resistance. And that means that when you have a real bacterial infection that requires an antibiotic, that antibiotic won't work because your body has just become used to it and the bugs are able to fight it.
What about parents looking at their kids as predictors for their own illness? If your child has something, are you guaranteed you're going to end up getting it?
Not always. Obviously, you know, you're very close to your child and you're going to be nursing them and caring for them, so you are going to be exposed to whatever bug they have. And typically with viruses, we know they spread more quickly than bacterial infections. But the reality is, as we get older, we tend to find we build up our own natural immunity and resistances. So I suppose, you know, we all see this when our child starts in a creche or our child starts in a school. It feels like they get one thing after another. And then they start to build up a bit of an immunity to it, and therefore they don't get sick or as sick the next time. And similarly for adults, that's what we find. I mean, you look at us as GPs, we're meeting bugs every day, but I'd say most of us rarely pick up anything. And actually, my own experience is the only time I've picked up anything is if I've been exposed to it at home from one of my kids, but not my patients. And again, that's because of that natural immunity and resistance we're building up.
What then about the dreaded circular that comes home from the school, either through app or text or email or in print, saying head lice have been found?
Head lice, yes. Head lice will start now. We're back at school. Those heads are close together. I think, you know, preventative measures are important. So keep checking your own child, perhaps once a week, and just go through their head, look for your head lice. So what you're looking for, the creepy crawlies on the scalp, but more importantly and more easy to see are the little white eggs that are on the shaft of the hair. And they're probably the easiest thing to see. And people sometimes say, well, how do I know it's not dandruff? Dandruff, when you flick it with your finger, moves. It's not stuck to the hair follicle. The egg from the head lice is stuck. And what you do, obviously, treatment, there are treatments available that you can put into the hair, but the hard reality is it's hard work. Really fine combing, and my advice to anybody with children with long hair is put lots of hair conditioner in and just fine comb, because even the treatments that you can get will only kid the active head lice. But unfortunately, by that time, they will have landed loads of eggs, and you know, a couple of days later, they're going to open up. So unless you're going to treat every day, probably for at least a week with the lotions, unless you do the fine combing, you're not going to get rid of the bugs.
And should you be doing it to your own head as well? Because parents tend to give kids cuddles and hugs, and heads get very close together.
They do, but I suppose get somebody to have a look. Ideally, have somebody who can go through your head, and obviously, if you have them, then treat yourself.
That's taking your relationship to a new level, really, isn't it? Honey, will you check me for nits?
Sure is.
What then about measles? Because this is a thing that we thought was a relic of the past, and it is coming back.
Well, as we're probably all aware, because there have been lots of health campaigns by the HSC, we're seeing rising numbers of measles. And measles is probably one of the most contagious diseases that we know of. It's more contagious than COVID, more contagious than flu. And the reality is, as you said, with the introduction of the MMR, the measles, mumps and rubella vaccine, and we kind of nearly saw it clearing, and we had no cases for years and years here. But lots of reasons have happened. Things have happened in that we have seen a drop off in vaccines. There was a false scare about the MMR some years ago, and that led to many parents being concerned that it might lead to a risk of autism. But we can absolutely say there is no link between autism and the MMR. And why can I say this? I can say this because worldwide studies have been done on this. And of all the vaccines we have, it is probably the vaccine that has had the most studying of after effects and side effects, and issues like autism have absolutely been outruled. So the big message is that that measles is there. We've had, I think, 100 cases already this year. And measles not only can kill, but can maim, can cause permanent brain damage and deafness. So what can we do about it? Vaccinate your child. If you're born after 1978 and you haven't been vaccinated, you can still be vaccinated. You can see your GP, or you can look at the HSE website, and they are running MMR vaccine clinics. If you have a child who's not fully vaccinated, and full vaccination means two vaccines, most children get one at the age of 12 months as part of their childhood program with their GP, and get another as part of their school vaccination program in their first year in school. If you're not sure they've had those, you can contact the HSE and they'll check. Again, if we're not sure, there is no harm in being given another one, and you can contact your GP or, again, the vaccine clinic and arrange that. And as an adult, if you're not sure, again, you can also go. Final message on the MMR is, if you're due to travel abroad with a child who's under the age of one, they can be vaccinated early. That will provide temporary immunity for during the travel time and while you're abroad, but they still will require two more vaccines, the one at 12 months and the one further one when they're in school.
Lastly, Ilona, what about the dividing line between pharmacist and GP? Because I assume there are a lot of conditions that you could have a pharmacist take a look at and give you something over the counter that end up unnecessarily in GP surgeries.
I suppose we've kind of mixed feelings on this. While GPs are busy and we understand patients can struggle at times to be seen, we're worried about fragmentation of care. And we kind of feel that sometimes, and we see this in our own surgeries, where perhaps some thrush treatments are available over the counter, especially we're here along the border and more of them are available in the north. We would find patients who've perhaps been self-treating, going to the pharmacist with a problem and recurrently, and perhaps going to different pharmacists, getting repeated treatments, and it's not the right treatment. And again, we would prefer to see more resources within general practice, more, you know, let's have other things like advanced nurse practitioners who can also provide the services, where we know that everything that's going on is under the one roof and that we have your records and we can pick up on that cystitis where somebody's saying, could this be a kidney infection, and treats you with an antibiotic, but they've never checked your urine or sent it to the laboratory. Or similarly with the query thrush where a swab has never been done. So again, there has this worked in other countries? GPs in the UK would say it hasn't worked in the UK, and therefore I as a GP would have concerns about introducing this into Ireland.
Dr. Ilona Duffy, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.